This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
David Jenkins, thank you so much, and welcome to WSMI Sports Saturday. Doesn't exactly feel like a traditional mid-July day with the big rain shower we had last night, kind of overcast conditions today, but we needed the rain, and we got the rain. We got a nice show lined up for you today here, as we will have Kelsey Card set to join us coming up at 9:15. Of course, Kelsey headed off to Tokyo, a two-time Olympian. She'll be leaving for the games here in about a week and a half or so. So we'll catch up with Kelsey in a few moments. Also, an interview with Reed Detmers is on the way as well. David and I chatted with Reed on Thursday as he has been selected to the All-Star Futures game. And David, he should be able to pitch in that game on Sunday, as he threw four innings on Wednesday, and Reed told us, and you'll hear it coming up, that was part of the plan to make sure that they got him out early enough on Wednesday to where he would be eligible to pitch on Sunday.
Sure, and being a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, you don't want to deny that. And he name-drops somebody as his coach.
And that it is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, because unlike the actual All-Star game where you have your whole career to make it and make it multiple times, this is basically a one-off. If you don't make it early, eventually you're not young enough to be one of the futures for this game.
Right. No, you're exactly right. I remember I got to go to one futures game back when it was in St. Louis in 2009, and the Cardinals prospects that were there were Brett Wallace and Darryl Jones. And if you've never heard of Darryl Jones, that's what we're talking about. When it's rare that it happens.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's no guarantees, but Reed has been stellar.
He has.
So far in Double A for the Trash Pandas, and he is, I don't want to say on the fast track to the big leagues, but he is high on the radar, and he's going to be there sooner than later, barring injury, of course. That's always the great factor.
And if he were playing in a system that was in contention, he'd have a better chance at getting there faster too, but because he's playing for a bad franchise, it might slow down his promotions.
That's right. So we will have that conversation with Reed coming up later in the hour. We're also going to talk to Don Borgini about the life of Don DeBrino. Of course, Don passed away on Sunday, and David, we've been thinking about it this week, you know, especially with, you know, Reed Detmers doing what he's doing. Don DeBrino is probably the greatest athlete in the history of Macoupin County. And you could probably extrapolate that out even to Montgomery County, Bond County, Madison County, whatever counties you want to include. This man was a two-way starter at Iowa, played and won in the Rose Bowl, I think 57, was a 10th round draft pick in the NFL by Washington, said, nah, not doing that. I'll instead go play pro baseball, and got all the way to AAA with the Pirates. I mean, you think about the combination of athletic ability. And of course, when he was at Mount Olive, his senior year, they won the conference championship in the four major sports. Hadn't been done before, hasn't been done since. That was back, 1953 in Mount Olive. So just recency bias is a thing, right? Like, it's a problem for all of us, especially in sports when you're talking about, well, who was the greatest of all time in this, or who was the best to do that? It's so easy to just think about your lifetime.
Yeah.
Right? But a lot of great athletes came long before you and I were walking the face of this earth. And Don DeBrino is just a great example, because, like, for people of our generation, he's a Hall of Fame coach.
Right.
And he was a heck of a football coach and an all-timer. But for people older than us, you know, people that are Don's age, they're going to say, no, man, when that dude was playing, he was a beast.
Yeah. Yeah, he's certainly on the short list. And you put up anybody's numbers today, or even, I guess, throughout history against his, it'd be hard not to choose him.
Well, you know, numbers are tough, a tough way
accolades,
to judge things.
Whatever.
Accolades,
yeah.
Whatever you want to say. But just all-around athlete. Didn't matter the sport he was playing, he was dominant. And he obviously was able to take all of that and parlay it then into being a coach that was able to relate to players through all the decades, David. And that is always, to me, one of the true testaments of an elite coach, is the ability to adapt to the times, right? Because I guarantee you, he couldn't treat athletes the same way his last year as he did his first year.
Right.
Right? You can't relate to a kid the same in 1976 as you do in 2020. It's just people are the same, but they're different, obviously. And he had the ability to get to kids of multiple generations, and they all walked away feeling the same way about Don DeBrino. You know, it's like, I'm playing for that dude.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he coached as recently as just a few years ago at Gillespie. So,
yeah, he was on Jacob Bilbrook's staff in 2017 and 2018.
Yeah. And as far as I know, not a negative word said about him.
Oh, no. So, heck no.
Yeah. It just, yeah, it goes to your point, adaptability. Knew how to coach, knew how to speak to kids no matter the generation.
And I've told this story before, but I remember being at a game several years ago, and it was probably in 2017 or 2018, and was walking by the Gillespie locker room, and Don was standing outside. And the kids, they had their music blaring, rap of some sort, you know.
Yeah.
And I looked at Don, I said, that's just what you guys listen to before you guys played back in the day, right? And he just kind of chuckled. He said, not exactly.
Yeah.
But he didn't care.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't matter to him one bit. Like, he just, his ability to just get to kids about life. And we're going to hear that from Don Borgini when we talk to him coming up a little bit later in the program. But this week you've heard the way former players have talked about him. And you can tell that the connection that he had was real, right? He wasn't invested in these kids so they could win in football games. You know, that was part of it, of course. But his goal was to get these kids ready for life. And, you know, we hear it all the time about football, you know, teaches life lessons. Sports in general teach life lessons. And when you have people like Don DeBrino teaching those lessons, it just seems to hit home a lot more.
No, you're exactly right. Yeah. Didn't the field at Gillespie is named after
him? It is, yeah. Don Duke DeBrino Field.
Yeah. There you go.
And it just, every time you saw the man, like, he would just pop up, you know, like, oh, look, there's Coach DeBrino. Hey, look, there he is. You never knew where you might run into him at. And he was so gracious and so nice, you know, like, he had this demeanor where if you saw him from afar and didn't maybe really know him, you think, boy, that's kind of a scary dude. I don't know, you know, I don't know if I want to go over and shake his hand, but he was the exact opposite.
Yeah.
Like when you knew him, he was so kind and gentle. Now, I'm not going to, all his former players probably didn't necessarily share those sentiments during some of the practices, but he was just such a wonderful man. And remember, he was on the school board
mm-hmm.
at Gillespie for a long, long time. So his impact in the community was just that. It wasn't a Gillespie football thing or where he was just concentrated on athletics and that was it. He cared about the community as a whole, and everybody in the Gillespie community has benefited from Don DeBrino's leadership over the years.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I don't have any.
But I mean, I just get over the fact he's like, I don't want to play in the NFL 10th round. I'm going to go play pro ball.
Well, it shows. I mean, he could have probably made a life anywhere after high school, and he came back.
David, that is a beautiful point that you just hit right there. He could have gone anywhere and done anything that he wanted. But what he wanted to do and where he wanted to be mm-hmm. was in Macoupin County.
Right.
And we're all thankful for that. All thankful for that. So Don DeBrino, gone at the age of 86, but you talk about a lasting legacy. That's Don DeBrino.
Right. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
We need to get to a break here on Sports Saturday. When we come back, we'll talk with somebody that Don DeBrino would be very proud of. Kelsey Card, a two-time Olympian. She'll be off to the Tokyo Games in less than 2 weeks. We will talk with Kelsey Card when Sports Saturday rolls on.
Back to Sports Saturday here on WSMI, and we rejoin Tim Mize.
David Jenkins, thank you so much. And, you know, when Kelsey Card qualified for the Olympic Games in 2016, like, wow, awesome. A once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Until it was a twice-in-a-lifetime opportunity, as Kelsey finished fourth at the Olympic trials top three qualify, but the girl who finished second, Michaela Hazelwood, she didn't have the Olympic standard or the world ranking to qualify for the game. So that bumped Kelsey into the top three and has her Tokyo bound here in 2021. It was a wild ride to get there, and it'll be great to catch up with Kelsey here in just a moment as she gets set for the Olympics in Tokyo. And First to Finish is doing t-shirts for Kelsey. You can go to kelsey2020olympics.itemorder.com/sale. $20 for the shirt. $10 of it goes right to Kelsey. I've got one of them. It looks fantastic, and I look forward to wearing it whenever Kelsey is competing in Tokyo. And she joins us on the phone right now. Kelsey Card, good morning. Congratulations.
Good morning. Thank you. Happy to be here.
What an amazing ride. And I got a hold of you a couple weeks ago, not realizing the circumstance that was happening. I just wanted to get your thoughts on the process and all this. And you tell me, wait a minute now, I still got a chance to get to the games. Some people I know are a little bit maybe confused about what has happened here. Take us through the process from the end of the trials to the beginning part of July when you found out you're going to Tokyo.
Yeah, so it was a little bit of a different process than when I made the team in 2016. So kind of off the top, a lot of times, as long as you finish, you know, top three at the trials, that usually means that you're going. So now for me, I finished fourth, didn't have a super great performance, but it is what it is, moving on. But the girl who got second place did not meet one of the secondary requirements of competing in the games, which is to either have hit an Olympic standard, which is a number, which is a distance or time that is put out by the committee of committees, and then, or have a world ranking within the top 32. So I have a world ranking within the top 32. I'm 23rd, I think is what it is. But anyway, the girl who got second technically had until July 29th to try to, obtain either one of those secondary requirements. And so whenever I was leaving the stadium, there was a chance that I could make the team, but there was also a chance that the second place girl could still obtain one of those. Hmm. And so she actually went to the Bahamas and competed, and then she competed in Michigan, I think once or twice, to try to get either one of those. Now she had a higher chance of hitting the standard than getting the world ranking just because there wasn't enough opportunities to get the points needed to move up in rankings. So she was chasing that number that was put forth. But she, you know, unfortunately for her, but fortunately for me, she did not hit that mark at any of the meets that she entered after the trials. And so since I was the next person outside of the top three that had one of those two secondary, requirements. So I was named to the team then on July 1st. And let me tell you, it was very, very stressful because my coach was very frustrated with me because he's like, this is why we finished top three and then it's not an issue. And I'm like, yes, Dave, I'm aware. Thank you.
No, Kelsey, knowing what I know about you, you're such a good-hearted, nice person. You don't wish ill on anyone. So what was that like in the back of your mind? You had to root against her, but yet you don't want to wish ill on her.
Yeah, it was really challenging because the girl, we threw against each other in college. She went to Purdue for undergrad and then did a year at Kentucky for grad school. But so I've known her for a long time. Hmm. She's such a nice person, super sweet and kind. And she had an amazing PR, personal best throw at the trials, you know, when you've got all the pressure and she came in and just got one out there, at trials. And so I was really, really excited for her, but you know, after, like, she knew as soon as the competition was done that she still had to do something else in order to go to the game. So, you know, I can only imagine what she was feeling as well. And you're right, it is hard because that's one of the things that I love about our sport is that, you know, it's so individual that you can work on yourself but still be happy to see others be successful too. And so it is really a challenge. But I did, you know, I touched base with her, you know, kind of after all this went down. I'm like, she's obviously really, you know, down about it, understandably. But, you know, I think that she's in a good mindset, and she's looking forward to training and continuing to work on it. So I'm happy for her for that. But yeah, it is a really tough, it's a tough situation to be in, you know. But I mean, I understand, you know, the rules as they are, and I had the qualification needed and she didn't. So it's kind of how it worked.
The old, you didn't make the rule. You just follow the rule and that's the rule. So off to Tokyo you go. So Kelsey, what has been your preparation here since you officially found out that you are going to the games? Take us through your work. What's your preparation?
Yeah, so because there was still a fairly decent chance that I would be going, you know, we didn't just like stop after the trials and wait. We kept going full bore. So I actually stayed out in Eugene till almost the end of trials to train with and support my Wisconsin teammate, Josie Schaefer, who was competing in the shot put, to have a training buddy and to stay to be able to keep practicing with my coach, Davis Droskis, who's from Troy, Illinois. But anyway, so I stayed out there, we kept training full going, and then as soon as we got back to Madison, I popped home for a hot second and threw it home, which was really, sidebar, it was really cool because I got to throw with my brother Daniel.
Wow.
In the new ring at the Carlinville High School and Middle School facility. So that was, it was like full circle. It was really
That's
cool.
Awesome right there.
So that was really neat. And I love the ring too. It's, oh my gosh, it's awesome. They did a great job.
They should probably name that after you, by the way.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing with it, but I like, this is going to sound weird, but like I like the surface, I like the texture, the sunken ring. I know those are all like weird things, but as a thrower, like it's a good fit.
I guess we shouldn't be surprised that Carnville did it right with track, should we?
Yeah, they crush it. It's exciting. So I've been here in Madison and we're going full, like I said, full speed ahead. And so it's kind of funny though, because to kind of prep for the time difference, because it's, I believe Tokyo is 14 hours ahead. And so my coach is having me practice at, you know, kind of random times. Like, okay, we'll be at 9 a.m. one day and then 8 p.m. the next. And it's kind of interesting. Like he was frustrated on Thursday because my lifting was during the Bucks game. So he was like yelling at his phone. While
like, coach, focus, coach, come on.
Yes, yes.
So, when will you leave for Tokyo then?
So, it's kind of strange. Whereas in Rio, I was there for the full Monty. I was there for like 3 weeks for opening, closing, all the things. But for this, they're only allowing us to go 5 days before we compete. Wow. And then we have to leave within 48 hours of finishing competing. Hmm. So, I leave on the 24th, and then I arrive, like, in the afternoon, evening of the 25th with the time change and flight and everything. So it's a pretty quick trip, and, I mean, I understand why they're doing it. It's just a bit of a bummer because we don't get to explore and stuff, but, hey, they're still having it, so I'll take it.
Well, Kelsey, that's been one of the things I've been most interested to get your thoughts on is so much for an Olympian, it's a one-shot deal. You know, you've got one games to make it. And that's that. So for the people whose this is their games, they're not going to get the full experience. So have you looked back at that 2016 experience now? It's like, wow, that is really something, because this isn't going. This is going to be completely different.
Well, I mean, I've thought about that, and you know, with the announcement, like, I mean, we've known for months now that foreign spectators weren't going to be allowed, and while that's unfortunate, it's, you know, it is what it is. And then a couple days ago, they made the announcement that there is going to be no spectators in the stands, and you know, it stinks. It really does, because that's what the Olympics are about, you know, to celebrate the height of sport and bring all of those countries from around the world together and have everybody there. But you know, I really sat and thought about it after that announcement. I was like, you know what? Like, it's going to be okay, because we are all still coming together. And I think that the style in which this is going to go down is going to allow for a lot more camaraderie and bonding among the athletes, because we're all we have there. And so I really look forward to that connection and experience.
Because I'm not sure exactly what your schedule was last year during the pandemic, but have you thrown in an empty stadium in a live meet?
Yeah, so it was funny. The other day my coach was like, well, no one's at practice, so you're used to that. and honestly, I feel pretty prepared for it, because the way that I look at it is the ring is the same. The sector is the same. I am the same person. And so focusing on what the things that I, the known variables and the things that I can control, I find to be really helpful. And as far as the atmosphere, I mean, it's unfortunate, but I have actually thrown at international competitions in pretty empty stadiums. And that was one of the things where Rio was really exciting because my family and friends, loved ones got to be there cheering me on. There really, unfortunately, weren't a lot of people in the stadium, just for various reasons. You can have a whole session of talking about that. But
right.
So there really weren't a ton of people there. And then, I mean, at Pan Am Games in Lima, Peru, there in 19, there weren't a ton of people there either. So it's sad to say, but I do feel fairly well prepped for the environment that's going to be in Tokyo. Although I am kind of hoping they'll do something fun with like cardboard cutouts and like pumped in sound or something.
I'm sure they'll figure something out. The main thing I hope for you at Tokyo is that it doesn't rain when you're throwing.
Well, you know what? We practiced in the pouring down rain, and it rained in Rio.
It did. I just remember watching that in Rio. I was like, you got to be kidding me. It's like, why is it raining now?
I know. But, you know, it's, like I said, it's just another factor, and that's the interesting thing about track is it's like who can handle those variables, you know, who can handle what's thrown at them. Literally and metaphorically, I guess.
Yes. Talking with Kelsey Card here. And, Kelsey, before we let you go, I just wanted to get your thoughts on Jaden Ulrich. I don't know. I mean, you're busy. You've got obviously your own things going. I don't know if you've been able to follow her career at Wood River. But she's on kind of a similar track to you.
Yeah. I mean, I have not, like, talked to her. But I've kind of followed here and there. And I think she broke some of my records.
I think she did. I didn't want to broach that.
No, and that's the thing. Like, I'm sorry, the last like 3 months are just a haze to me. But I do remember that now. And you know what? I mean, I held them for a while, and that's cool. But I think I'm not one of those people to be, you know, angry about that, because to me that shows progression of the sport and the event, and that's what I want to see. And, you know, Illinois has historically had some pretty awesome throwers.
Yeah.
And so it's really exciting for me to see that, and especially someone from our area. Mm-hmm. You know, that's really cool. And so, hopefully I get to meet her someday. That'd be really cool. But I just congrats to her, and keep working hard, because we're a community, and it's exciting to see the sport go forward like that. And I'm happy for her. That's really cool.
And Kelsey, I mean, a two-time Olympian, do you have to pinch yourself just every once in a while to really appreciate what you have accomplished here? I mean, this is truly remarkable. From Carlinville to a two-time Olympian, amazing.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that not all of Rio has even soaked in yet.
Sure.
But it's just, you know, I'm so excited to represent, you know, our area and Carlinville, and just to have that for our community, because there's so many amazing people that have just helped me along the way from there and Madison too. And just, they've always supported me, and I'm so thankful for them, and to get to kind of bring some of this excitement and share in this journey with them is really what makes it for me.
And Kelsey, I know you've completed your master's degree, and you've got your business open. I know that was such an important thing for you, and you've gotten it done. Tell us a little bit about it, please.
Yeah, so I graduated with my master's in marriage and family therapy in 2019 because, you know, unfortunately, being a female track athlete in the U.S., we don't really make a lot of money.
Right.
And that's one thing, like with Tokyo, the community has really rallied around me with that and supported me with the First of the Fittest t-shirt sales. And like, people have been so generous and amazing, and I'm so thankful. But with my therapy stuff, you know, I don't do well just focusing on throwing. I found that out the hard way after I graduated from college. I have to have something else going on. And since therapy is my other passion, I was like, well, let's get... And I've been so lucky with how well that passion of mine has blended and met with my throwing career and passion. And so I have a private practice, and I'm not able to go, you know, full-time, full everything with it just to balance the throwing. But it works pretty well because I can set my own schedule and things like that. And honestly, with the prevalence of teletherapy with the COVID, business the last year and a half, it's really nice because I've been able to travel and see clients on the road because as long as I have internet, I can see them anywhere through my HIPAA video chat platform. And so that's been really, really nice not having to move around and reschedule based on my competition's schedule this year. But yeah, I'm really happy that I can have that going because a lot of athletes, you know, when they retire from sports, they don't really know what to do with their life and they just feel kind of lost. So I feel very blessed that I've been able to have this other part of my life going, and it will be a hopefully smooth transition when I, to be determined, do retire.
to be determined. So I don't even want to ask you this question because I know how your mentality is and I know how you operate on this stuff. Will you consider 2024? I hate to even ask it. I'm sorry, but I had to.
Well, as everyone keeps pointing out, it is now only 3 years away.
That's true.
Instead of four.
Right.
So that is very true. And there is two world championships in between here and there, one of which is in Eugene, which is exciting to have one here in the U.S. for the first time. But yeah, I don't know. I thought that I would have, you know, a definitive feeling after the trials and I don't. So, you know, we'll evaluate or reevaluate after Tokyo. I've had some talks with my coach and there will be more talks and just to see, you know, how my body feels. But like I said, I'm really lucky to have the people around me supporting that I do, because that support makes it a viable option for me to keep training and keep competing. If that's what I want to do. So the availability is there, which is really exciting. So it's just kind of seeing where my head is at and where my body's at after Tokyo. But like I said, it's only 3 years away.
That 3 years will go fast too. It'll be here before we know it. We know that. Kelsey Card.
The last five, yes.
Oh boy, Kelsey Card. Thank you so much for a few minutes of your time this morning. Best of luck and enjoy Tokyo. And hopefully, maybe we can chat again after you get back and talk about the experience.
Yeah, definitely. I would love to. Love you guys. You're awesome.
Kelsey, thank you so much. Congratulations.
Thank you. Have a great day.
All right. That is Kelsey Card. And David, you know, we were talking about, you know, Don DeBrino earlier, and we're going to catch up with Don Borgini here in just a moment to talk about the life of Don DeBrino. But Kelsey, kind of the same, cut from the same cloth, right? Like elite athlete, but a better person.
Yeah. Great personality.
Oh, goodness. Yes.
Bubbly.
Bubbly. And I guarantee it killed her to have to root against Michaela Hazelwood. It absolutely did. But you do what you got to do.
I have a feeling she would have been happy for her.
There's no question she would have been.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no question she would have been. But that was a long, I think it was like 10 days where she had to just sit and wait. And I'm sure that that 10 days might have felt like 3 years.
Right. Well, and this could have been gravy for all we know. I mean, she might have just been excited and happy for how her career has gone because she's been to the Olympics. But then the fact that she was named was just extra sweet.
Two-time Olympian.
Absolutely.
Sweet indeed. We need to get to a break. On the other side, we're going to talk with Don Borgini. He's known Don DeBrino basically his entire life, was coached by him, coached with him. So we're going to talk to Don Borgini about the great life of Don DeBrino when Sports Saturday continues.
Back to Sports Saturday here on WSMI, and we rejoin Tim Mize.
Thank you, David. Cardinal baseball today from Wrigley Field. Cards, Cubs, 520 with the pregame, AM 1540, FM 106.9 and 92.9. Cubbies took it yesterday by the final of 10-5, back at it tonight at Wrigley. So 5:20 with the pregame this evening. Of course, Don DeBrino, big Cubs fan. Big Cubs fan was Don DeBrino. And he passed away earlier this week, passed away Sunday at the age of 86. Just one of the true treasures, not just of the area, but just really of the whole state or just of the human race in general. Don DeBrino was as good as it gets from top to bottom, start to finish. He was everything you could ever want from a human being. And Don Borgini probably spent about as much time with him as anybody did. And we're happy to have Coach Borgini on the phone right now. Don, thank you for a few minutes of your time. I wish it was for a different reason, but I'm sorry for your loss, first off.
Thank you much for that, Tim. Before I talk about Coach DeBrino, I got a little practical joke that Kelsey Card played on me.
There we go. Beautiful.
And I'll tell you what, my good buddy Ken Garrison is the one that started all of this. I was coaching at Gillespie at the time, and Kelsey was a senior, and they needed somebody to measure the shot puts before the Macoupin County track meet at Gillespie. Well, I knew absolutely nothing about it. Gillespie didn't have a scale to weigh it or anything, so I said, well, Mike Bertinoli come and asked me to do it. I'm like, okay, I don't know what I'm doing. But so I called Ken Garrison the week before and said, hey, Ken, can I use your scale to weigh these shot puts for all these kids when they come in? He goes, sure, do you know what you're doing? I go, of course not. I don't know what I'm doing at all. So it's just something they asked me to do. So as soon as he found that out, I guess the wheels went into motion, and he decided he was going to play a practical joke on me with Kelsey. So I'm sitting in the coach's office there at the field in Gillespie, and the teams are all rolling in. And, you know, Kelsey had already won 3 state championships and had won everything, you know, going into her senior year. So she was obviously going to win the county and everything
right.
else. So I'm sitting in there, and Coach DeBrino is with me. So, because, you know, I didn't know what I was doing. So I said, hey, Coach, would you help me measure these and weigh these shot puts for these kids? You go, yeah, sure, Donnie, I'll do it. So he knew about as much as was going on as I did. So here's the two of us sitting at the table in the coach's office, and these athletes are being paraded in there with their shot puts and discus that we're supposed to be putting on this small scale that Coach Garrison gave us. So I'm weighing them and saying yes or no to them, you know, and like I really know what I'm doing. Well, you know, all these people are standing around it. Well, pretty soon, here comes Kelsey. It was her turn to come in and weigh her shot put. And Ken's with her and a whole mess of Carnival people. And I'm like, well, you know, I guess this is how it is. Everybody comes in there to see how this works. So Kelsey sets her stuff on the table, and she's all in uniform. And Coach Sabrino and I are sitting there. And she pulls a shot put out of the bag and sets it on the scale. And I'm looking at it. Well, it's clearly way too light. And so I'm thinking, Kelsey Card giving me something that doesn't work? I said, that can't be. I mean, there's no way. I mean, this has got to be fine. So I took it off and set it back down. And, you know, Ken's looking over my shoulder. And so I put it back on there. What clearly weighs light again. So what do? I can't go against Kelsey Card. I said, yeah, it's okay. Well, everybody in the room blew up, started with Ken. They go, you can't okay that. That's her practice lightweight shot, but we were just testing you to see if you knew what you were doing. And guys, so I told Kelsey, I said, I'm going to get you back for that one of these days for being a participant in a joke against me from Harrison. So then Coach DeBrito, he just sat there and he was like, Donnie, I can't believe you fell for that.
Oh, they got you, Don. They got you.
It was a good one, though.
That's funny. That's good. But, you know, that's part of kind of what makes Kelsey is that type of personality. And Don, I mentioned earlier when I was talking about Coach DeBrino, his personality and his ability to relate to generations of kids. That, to me, is what really stands out. He related to you in the 70s, and he related to kids when he was on Coach Bill Brooks' staff in 2018.
Yeah, you know, I don't think he's a guy that ever even, just kind of changed his ways. He had a method of teaching and practice. You know, I've kind of had a chance all week to just kind of reflect about him a little bit, about the way he did things and how he did adapt to everybody throughout the generations. And I think about the way that he, just something as simple as the way he handled his drills in football and baseball practice in 1975 when I was there, as opposed to when he was coaching with me, in Gillespie there at the end. It was still the same type of setup, the same type of intensity, the same type of expectations. And I think that it just shows you right there that his methods do stand the test of time, and his personality stands the test of time. And his ability to go and learn things, like I said before, he would go out and learn not for himself, but to bring back to the kids. And I think he used that model all the time, his practice model of, how am I going to get this information to these kids? And he never changed that model as to how he did it. He never changed his expectations. And really, I mean, next to being maybe a little bit harder on you in 1975 than he was in 2013, I still think he, you know, he would get after you a little bit because he would come in sometime and just be so riled up. And I said, now just calm down. Here I am telling him to calm down, you know. And he would get so fired up because he would expect everybody to do so good. But I really think that's the secret to his success. His kids knew of his expectation of them. And I think he, when you really look at it and cut the chase, people who played for him, people who worked for him, people who worked with him, people who worked around him, including his own family structure, everything, he had a set of expectations and people rose to them.
Hmm.
I really believe that is the best description of him, is that he made everybody around him rise up. I really do.
And, you know, that's a wonderful thing, because I feel like sometimes now expectations are almost like a bad thing. It's like, well, you know, if we have expectations, we might fail. I don't want to do that. That was not Coach DeBrino's mentality.
No, Coach was never afraid of a loss. But I'll tell you what, he did not accept it well. Now, I'm not going to
Right.
Say
There's
that.
A difference. There's
not
a difference.
Accept it well. But I'll guarantee you, once it was over and, you know, the shouting was done in the coach's office, it was on to the next game and how are we going to clean this up? So, you know, that is something that I really liked about him. He would play anybody, anywhere, at any time, and do the best job he could with it. And, you know, he was special when it come to being a competitor.
Well, Don, we're talking with Don Borgini here. And, Don, I'm curious, because when you were playing for him at Gillespie, he was a young man. He wasn't that far removed from, you know, playing in AAA and being drafted in the NFL, all that stuff. What was he, when you were a freshman, sophomore in high school, what was he like physically at practice?
Oh, my, Tim. I'm telling you, when I, in 73, when I was a freshman, I think Coach had to be probably 40, maybe 39, 40. And, you know, he just got done playing maybe 10 years earlier.
Yeah.
And, of course, he kept himself in tremendous physical shape. And, you know, as far as baseball goes, I mean, he was our head baseball coach in, you know, we had some really good teams under him. I mean, how fortunate am I? I mean, he was the head coach. Mike Fenton, who played in the Cardinals organization and the Gillespie graduate, was his assistant. And Sam Stewart, at the time, was the freshman coach.
My gosh.
Coach DeBrino, Mike Fenton, and Sam Stewart was our baseball staff. So you can understand how easy, I don't want to say easy because they worked their tail off, but we had such a strong baseball program in those years. But he would pitch batting practice, Tim, and again, I go back to the competitiveness in him. And we had a good ball club. Well, he'd get tired of laying it in there. Okay, you know, and we'd be hitting it, and there was never an L screen in front of Coach DeBrino.
Oh boy,
never.
Oh boy,
no. Because if you hit one, you were going to get his exploding slider or curveball on the next pitch. So, you know, he would give you a couple of line drives, and then the competitiveness in him would come out, and it would go into, I'm going to strike you out. He'd start thinking, Coach, aren't you supposed to be throwing batting practice against us and not getting us out? That's how it usually turned out.
It started that way, didn't it?
I know how fortunate I was during those years, and all of us during then, to have. You know, we had him in football, Jerry Grandoni in basketball and track, and then him again in baseball. Those were the two head coaches that you got to play for during my 4 years in high school. I thought, mercy, how lucky am I?
Well, that is a special time right there.
Yes, it is. I'll tell you, they were fantastic, and they worked together. There was none of this garbage of this sport over that sport and trying to steal athletes. I mean, if you screwed up with Coach DeBrino, you were going to hear it from Coach Grandoni and vice versa.
Yeah.
And that's just the way I viewed it every day when I went into school. I mean, ooh, man, those two were like one.
Talking with Don Borgini, and Don, I remember years ago when you were at Carnival, I was talking to you someone about football, and I don't know why I was talking. I was talking about offense, this, offense, that, and you said, Tim, blocking and tackling. That's what it comes down to. And you said that, and I thought, yeah, no, that's exactly right. But that came from Don DeBrino, that type of mindset and mentality. The KISS principle, don't overcomplicate it. You block, you tackle, you're probably going to do good.
It did. I'll tell you, when I first started coaching in 1982, of course, I only knew one thing, and that was the wing tee. And I only knew how to set up practice from the way Coach DeBrino had taught me to set up practice when I was in high school, and a little bit of time I got to talk to him before he actually took the job. So when I first started doing it, I thought, well, you know, I had all these bright ideas. I was going to do this. I was going to do that. And, you know, he was right there alongside me, even though he was the head coach at Gillespie and I was at Burton, you know. Mm-hmm. And we would have, like, these little mini camps together in the summer and that. And I'm like, you know, I'm like 22, 23 years old. And he is still doing all of these, just these basic things. And, you know, they had been so good. They'd been to the state championship, you know, and mm-hmm. multiple playoffs year after year, you know, the way they were. And I kept thinking, you know, I'm doing all this, doing all that, and just wasn't working out real well. He says to me, he goes, you know, Donnie, you need to go back to the drawing board. You need to get simple. You need to teach the basics, and you need to teach fundamentals. And ever since I did that, he kind of got alongside me, and lo and behold, the program started to lift up and go in the right direction. Yeah. But it's all because of what he did. And, you know, I just think of some of the trips that we took together. He was just such a student of the game. And, you know, like I said, he was a big wing tee guy. And I know his dream was always to go out to Delaware, where, you know, where the wing tee originated, out at the University of Delaware. So he says to me, he says, Donnie, let's go to Delaware. I said, okay. So I went home, talked to my wife. So we took off, and he said, you call and see if they'll let us come out there. So I call, and sure enough, Tubby Raymond, who's the head coach, and Ted Kemsky, who was the offensive coordinator, they're like the two wing tee gurus in the world, you know. So I said, hey, can Coach Sabrino and myself come out there for 3 or 4 days and kind of pick your coaching staff's brain and watch practice and that? Well, absolutely. So we get our plane reservations, everything, and we leave out of Chicago. So the trip starts like this. We're on this little puddle jumper plane. And there's only, on one side of the plane, there's two seats, and on the other side of the plane, there's one. So he gets on there, and the pilot, we're sitting there waiting. The pilot doesn't take off, so he comes back, and he's looking around at the 8 people on this flight, and he says, you, and he points to the coach, he goes, you need to move to the other side of the plane to balance the weight out. So I'm thinking, holy cow, man, we're leaving here on this little plane, and they got to move a big dude like that to the other side to balance it. So we get out there, and we fly into Newark, and we get there on Thursday, you know, and we're all excited. You know, we get there Thursday night. Well, the first day we're going to meet with the staff is Friday morning out there, and they told us to be there at 8 o'clock. So anything you've ever done with Coach Sabrino, you know you're going to be early and on time. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be early. So, of course, we're up at 5, and we go to get breakfast. And lo and behold, it's 6 o'clock. He goes, well, let's go to the stadium. So we go to the stadium, and we get there. It's about 6:15. All the doors are locked. Nobody around. So we're hanging out there waiting. Pretty soon a custodian walks up, lets us in. So we're hanging outside at Tubby Raymond's coach's office. And pretty soon he shows up, and he goes, boy, you guys are early. Well, the rest was history. I mean, we got so much information in those 3 days on the wing tee and how to do things and how to drill it by watching their team and everything. And, you know, we didn't come home till Sunday, but I can remember on the Saturday night, you know, I'm getting kind of tired because we had been going hard all day with football, football, football. And, of course, you know, we had a few drinks at night. And
well, sure.
So late Saturday afternoon comes around, and we're all done with the Delaware staff, and we're getting ready to go home on Sunday. So I'm getting ready to kick back in the hotel room, and he says, Donnie, get in the shower, we're going to church. So because no matter where we went, and we went so many different clinics all over the country, really, and but I'll tell you what, that man never missed his Catholic Mass.
Yeah.
And so he was looking on there, and he found the church that was about a mile away, so sure enough, well, I get showered, and let's go. We're out the door. We walk a mile, go to Catholic Mass, come back, have a few drinks, go to bed, get up, get on the plane, come home.
Trip over.
But it was a great trip. It was one of our first long trips. And, you know, we went to Pittsburgh, Kansas City. We went all over the place, just kind of studying wing tee stuff. And, you know, during those times, that's where I really kind of found out what really makes that guy tick, you know, is your private times with him, but talking about family, talking about employment, not just X's and O's. And, you know, that's why he, you know, next to my dad, he was just the biggest influence in my life, is just you know, the way he handled his family, the way his expectations were about his family, the way his expectations were about Gillespie High School at the time, and students and the teachers and how people worked. And he's just, I know a lot of people know that he's a very special human being, and he sure is, man. I'll tell you, and just 2 years ago when he got diagnosed with cancer, I'm playing golf down in Staunton with Ken Garrison. He's with me in the same cart. While the phone rings, it's Coach. So I put it on speaker, and he's got this low tone of voice because, you know, I'd already known he'd been diagnosed mm-hmm. with cancer. And he says, "Donnie, I need to see you." And so Ken's listening over there, and I'm thinking, what is going on, man? He says, I said, "Well, I'm playing golf down here. Saw it now." He says, "Well," he says, "I really do need to see you." So I'm like, "Oh man, is he going to tell me that the time is short here, and something like that?" You know. So Ken and I are sitting there. So we get off the course, and I rush home. I said, "Coach, I'm on my way home." You know. And so I come in the door first, and I tell my wife, and I said, "Hey, I think Coach is going to come up here and tell me that his time is short." So, and this is in the month of June, you know. So I'm sitting here at the house, and I'm kind of down. I'm waiting for him to pull in. He pulls in the driveway, and he's sitting in the driveway in my house. He's not coming in, not coming in. So I finally go out. I go, what are you doing? He gets out. He goes, "Get that box out of the front seat over there." So I'm like, okay. I do what I'm told, you know. So I go in, get the box out of the front seat, carry it in the house. Well, it was my birthday the next day. He had this birthday cake made for me from BK Bakery. Wow. And he wanted it to be a surprise. It had nothing to do with any illness or anything like that. But he made it sound like that. So we went in the house, went in the kitchen, and he opens up this big box. And, you know, Wayne Blevins was a guy that was same age. Well, his birthday, same day as mine. He's a physician's assistant here in Carmel. So he had tried to get a hold of Wayne to have Wayne meet me at my house here at the same time so we could both. He bought a cake for both of us, two of his ex-players. And we were sitting in my kitchen at birthday cake. So, I mean, that's just one little tiny story of probably thousands that that man did for people. And just one of the reasons why he's so special. I mean, he's just one in a million.
Well,
sure.
That's exactly right. And just one final thing. I want to talk about, like you just hit on it, but Don DeBrino, the man, the human being. I mean, this is a guy who spent decades on the school board. He cared about the community beyond athletics. You know, that was kind of his venue to reach a lot of people was athletics, but he was so much more than that. Just talk about, if you could again, Don DeBrino, the human being, and just what a class act he was.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, when Coach first got on the board, you know, I kind of thought of him as kind of maybe a high-strung guy, and I didn't know how well he would do with that. But I'll tell you what, he was as good a solid a board member, I think, as you're going to find, level-headed guy. He was so familiar with the school district, the community, the way the people in the community thought. And I just think he turned out to be fantastic. But he was part of the fire department. I mean, just such a giving person. I mean, when he was working for me, like I said, I don't know how many $1,000s he spent on that five-man sled. I don't know how many thousands of dollars he spent on a golf cart. I mean, the videotapes and things that he would buy and just give to me, give to other coaches, uniforms, shirts. I could just go on and on and on about the things that the guy has done and given. But he's, you know, some people who know him will say he's a big teddy bear. And I would say that's probably true. He's a big, gruff, tough guy, you know, but he had the heart the size of a mountain.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, he's going to be missed. He's going to be missed. Just walking into that field at Gillespie and people seeing him and having an air of confidence about the school and the program. And, you know, those are the things I think people like him, you know, they leave and that people don't get back. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
I mean, imagine walking in there and he's just not there anymore. He's not, his presence is not there. And it's not like saying somebody else can just pick that up and take it over, because it doesn't work like that. So,
no.
It'll take a while for another person. It's like anything else. Everybody can be replaced. We know that. But
they'll never be another Don DeBrino, though. You know, God ain't making another one of those.
Nope, there's no way around it. I mean, his legacy's thrown around, that term's thrown around too much, but he's definitely got one, and those of us that knew him know when he was with you and standing next to you, you could beat anyone.
Yeah. And then just
that was the feeling that you had. You could beat anyone because he was with you.
What a thing to instill. And one final thing. Yeah. We talked about recency bias, especially with athletes. Is he the greatest athlete in the history of Macoupin County?
Boy, I'll tell you what. If he's not, he's got to be in the top two.
Sure does.
I mean, you know, Tunde Ridley was fantastic as well. You know, did a lot of things at that level. But to say that you're on the professional level in two sports, especially those two, football and baseball, are very difficult to make it in. And, you know, he had the body, he had the strength, he had the speed, and he had most of all the mentality of toughness to get through that. And like I said, if you've ever stood next to him, you know that there's no challenge that's big. He'll get through it, and he'll attack it with a vengeance. And like I said, that's the kind of spirit that he put into people around him, and I'm sure he played with that. You know, my dad always told me what a tough nut he was over there, and, you know, big and strong and, you know, just physical.
you didn't want to be on the business end when he was coming down the line at you.
No, buddy. I think that, like I said, before we played in the state championship in 1976, he showed us his 57 Rose Bowl game film to fire us up the night before in the hotel at Bloomington. And, you know, he kind of made the key play near the end of the game there. I think he intercepted a pass and run it down to about the 20, and of course then Iowa scored after that and beat Oregon State. But I remember how fired up we were. I couldn't even sleep after, you know, not only did we play in the state championship, but after watching that and going, you know, man, my coach did this. And just, he had so many things that he could get you fired up with. It was just unreal.
That is awesome. Don Borgini, thank you so much for talking about Don DeBrino this morning, sir. He will be missed, obviously, but his legacy will live on forever.
Yep, it sure will. And I miss the heck out of him. But, you know, I love his family and I love everybody around him. And, you know, let's just enjoy, like, all the things I just talked about for the last 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Just keep on enjoying him. And I will, because I'll tell you what, I got a lot of great memories with him that no one can ever take away from me.
That's exactly right. Don Borgini, thank you so much, my friend.
All right, thanks. You guys have a good day. Go Cubbies.
Go Cubbies. There you go. Yes, Cards Cubs tonight, 520 AM 1540 FM 106.9 and 92.9. This is WSMI FM, Litchfield, Hillsboro, Carthenville, and Greenville. As T-Tote used to say, David, we're going into extra time here today on Sports Saturday. We're going to take a break. When we come back, earlier this week, David and I had a chance to talk it over with Reed Detmers. He'll be in the All-Star Futures game tomorrow in Denver. Our conversation with Reed is next on Sports Saturday.
Joining us on the phone right now is Reed Detmers, the former Nokomis pitcher, now pitching in minor league baseball for the Rocket City Trash Pandas. Reed, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Fantastic. And since we've spoken to you last, you can add another accolade to your list. You are a member of the 2021 Futures game. How does that sound to you?
I mean, it's definitely a pretty cool thing to be a part of. I didn't know much about it really before this year. So once I found out, I did a little bit of research. And, it's something that I'm proud of. Can't wait to get out there.
And Reed, obviously you've been a part of showcases and all-star games throughout your baseball career, but outside of the actual all-star game, this futures game is as big as it gets in terms of all-star showcases.
I agree. Not very many people get to have this kind of opportunity, so I'm definitely grateful, and like I said earlier, just can't wait to get back out and get out there and just have fun. It's definitely an experience of a lifetime, and yeah, just looking forward to meeting new guys and getting to compete against them.
Reed, how did you get the news? How did you find out?
It was after my outing in Chattanooga. We were just on the bus, and my coach, Jay Bell, came up to me and just said, like, I don't know if this is the right time to tell you, but you're going to the Futures game. and that was really it. So it wasn't anything crazy. He just came up to me on the bus and told me, and that was pretty much it.
Ho hum. What about your parents' reaction? What did they say to you, or your family in general, when you told them you were going to be pitching in the Futures game?
They were excited. They were happy for me. Other than that, I can't really tell you how excited they were. I just talked to them over the phone. I didn't see them face to face, so yeah. I mean, they're happy.
Now, Reed, we're talking on Thursday. The Futures game is Sunday. You pitched last night 4 innings. So, what will your status be? Will you be available to throw on Sunday?
Yeah, and that's why I got moved up to a 4-day rest this week so I could pitch in the game on Sunday. I was on a pitch limit yesterday, and so yeah, I'm all good.
How does the arm feel?
I feel great. Body feels good. Arm feels good. Just ready to go out there and compete.
And when we look at your numbers here, you have been just fantastic. 11 starts, 50 innings, 91 strikeouts, and an ERA of 3.6. Just talk a little bit about how you feel about how you've done here through the first few months of Double A.
I'm definitely adjusting still. I know I started out pretty slow, just trying to adjust. But the past couple of weeks, I think, have been really good. I'm starting to figure out certain pitches. Different like sequences and stuff like that, just keeping the batters off balance. So I think that's the main thing. I mean, just having first pitch strikes and stuff like that and just getting ahead. Once you get ahead, things get a lot easier. So in the past couple weeks, I've been doing that, so I've been having a lot of success.
Well, as Tim said, your numbers are fantastic. I try not to pay too much attention to a minor league pitcher's ERA because that can be deceiving at times. I really look at the strikeout to walk totals, and those are phenomenal right now. If you had to be overly critical of yourself, what is something you feel you could be doing better?
Fastball command. I mean, usually my fastball command's pretty good. Right now, I wouldn't say it's usually where it's at. I definitely think I could locate a little bit better. There's always a batter or two during the game where I just lose command with it. So I think going out there and just attacking them, throwing my fastball for more for strikes than I am right now, that'd be huge.
Reed, one of the different things about obviously being in the minor leagues is the roster can just be different from day to day. Has there been a lot of roster turnover where guys are either going up or going down, or has it been a pretty consistent roster here through the first part of the season?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely guys going up and down. I wouldn't say it's all the time, but there are guys that go up and down. And, yeah, it's something you have to get used to, especially if they're somebody that plays behind you a lot and then you look out there and they're not there anymore. But I wouldn't say it's that big of a deal. I mean, everybody here is good. They're here for a reason. But, yeah, definitely people are bouncing up and down.
We're speaking with Reed Detmers, again, pitcher in the Angels farm system right now, formerly at Nokomis. He's the 9th left-handed pitching prospect in baseball, according to MLB.com, the number 2 on the Angels prospect chart, and number 57 overall on MLB.com. Do you pay attention to any of that stuff, Reed? Do you ever sneak a peek, or do you just kind of ignore it?
No, I try to ignore that stuff. That's kind of the last thing I want to look at, too. I try keeping my mind on the things that are important, and just those things, like, obviously they are important to some people, but for me, I'd rather go out there and compete and not look at that stuff. So, yeah, I don't really pay attention to that stuff a whole lot.
And what those numbers say is if you do your job, you're going to be in the show sooner than later. I'm just curious, when you're in the minor leagues, like just the Double-A Trash Pandas as a whole, I don't imagine there's a lot of focus on the big club out in Anaheim. But part of you has to see, oh, this Shohei Ohtani guy, he's kind of good.
Yeah, he's really good. I mean, I don't even know what to say. He can hit, he can pitch, he can do everything. So
we're talking with Reed Detmers here. And Reed, back to the Trash Pandas here. What is your rapport like with your catcher? Are you throwing to the same guy consistently? Do you have multiple guys you're working to? How's that scenario?
Yeah, I have one guy, Anthony Mulrine. He's been my catcher all year. He catches all my pins. He catches me during the game. So we have a good chemistry going. And yeah, he's good. He's always trying to learn. And we're always working together in our pens, trying to figure stuff out. So he's good back there.
Talk to me about the bullpen session. It's not a matter of just going out and just throwing your pitches as fast as you can, obviously. What are you working on when you're doing your bullpens?
I mean, it's different every week. Sometimes it's mechanics. Sometimes it's pitch sequencing or tunneling. And then sometimes it's just trying to hit spots. It really just depends on what I need to get better at that week. Like last week, I was working on tunneling my pitches and just trying to throw them out of the same tunnel so they all look the same when it got to the hitter. But yeah, I mean, it's different every week. Just depends on what I need to work on and what I didn't do well the week before.
Reed, obviously one of the big things about minor league baseball is the bus rides. But I don't imagine you'll be taking a bus ride from Alabama out to Denver.
No, I'll be flying. Yeah, I catch a flight early Saturday morning, get there sometime Saturday afternoon, and then I head back here Monday morning. So it's a quick turnaround.
Do you know who your manager is going to be for the Futures game? Because it's usually a pretty big name.
Someone told me, but I can't remember. Uh-huh. I'd have to go back and look.
Well, I didn't research it either, so.
Reed, I always love, though, like, your mentality. That is what separates the guys who actually play the game from everybody else. Like, we focus on all these ancillary things. You're like, I don't know. I got the call. I'll go in. I'll pitch. I'll do my job, and I'll go back. That really is the type of just focus that's going to just take you all the way through your career, isn't it?
Maybe. I don't know. I hope so.
I guess that will be something, too. As the months pass, that will get a little more challenging, won't it? Because as you get closer and closer, you're going to have more and more people just telling you how good you are and all those different things. And it's going to be hard to block out.
I mean, no. There's always people texting me, calling me, mm-hmm. messaging me on social media, just telling me everything. So I'm pretty used to it. Obviously, once I make the next jump, it'll get a little bit more crazy. But I don't think it's going to really faze me a whole lot. That stuff doesn't bother me. I know what I have to do and what I have to do it. So that kind of stuff, it's nice, but it doesn't really bother me.
The social media, that is certainly an aspect, isn't it? You can find out all sorts of things about yourself you didn't even know, can't you?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't even know what to say about that. There's all kinds of stuff on there.
Reed, over the last few weeks, Major League Baseball has decided to crack down on the use of foreign substances after largely ignoring it for the better part of history. As a pitcher, how do you feel about that?
I mean, it doesn't bother me. I mean, I don't even know what to say about it. Not that I don't think it's that big of a deal, especially if how everything's going right now. Yeah, it's not a big deal, honestly. Some guys might need it, but most guys, they don't really care.
Now, Reed, are they enforcing that the same in the minor leagues as they started in the major leagues, to where you got to hand over your hat and your glove and your belt to the umpire at the end of an inning?
Yeah, after every inning or so, probably two or three times a night for the starting pitcher, at least two or three times, and then every inning for the relievers. They'll check your hat, they'll check everywhere on your glove, and then they'll check the inside of your pants and your belt. So, I mean, obviously, if you're using stuff, you're going to get caught.
Right.
So,
well, I know I saw Sergio Romo, I think it was the first time, he just dropped his pants, said, here it is, boys.
Yeah, it's definitely different, especially if we aren't used to doing that, like getting searched as we walk off the field. So it takes to get some time to get used to it, but at the end of the day, it's not that big of a deal.
Well, Reed, again, we thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to speak with us here on WSMI. Congratulations on the successful season you've had thus far, and again, congratulations again for being named to the Futures game, because even for a lot of top prospects, it doesn't happen, so you are in elite company, my friend.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And that was Reed Detmers here on Sports Saturday. Thanks to Reed. Thanks to Kelsey Card. Thanks to Don Borgini for joining us here this morning on Sports Saturday.